All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio, and on the line we have Andres Vargas, who is based in Colombia and is a lecturer with at the Universidad of Central de Colombia. So, good morning, Andres. Good morning, Andres. So, I obviously it's probably the afternoon in Colombia right now, and we've been hearing reports of there's been a lot of things happening in Colombia with kind of like massive kind of protests and many other kind of things kind of happening. There's been a massive protest against this tax reform bill that's been implemented by the Colombian government, and of course that has been pushed by the Colombian government, and of course has also been met with massive police repression of these protests. I guess can you tell me in what is, I guess, the context in terms of the political situation that is happening in Colombia right now?
Well, the political situation that we are experiencing back right now, we can trace it back to 2019, when we start to see this massive protest in the country. In this moment. What happened is that national unions call for a strike, general national strike, on the 28th of April because of the tax reform. But the political environment and atmosphere is not entirely attached to the tax reform. That's the point of juncture, but there's plenty of stuff happening besides the tax reform. As you may know, our country went to the peace agreement the peace agreement in 2016, and since then, there was this kind of ambience of hope within the country, ambience of that we were going to see change in the country, and that was accompanied by 15 years of improving living conditions for the people. So there was this kind of ambience that we were walking towards something better. There were of course many problems, but we were experiencing that kind of hope. But unfortunately, when the new government got elected, one of the goals of this government was in many senses to dismantle the peace agreement in many senses. They say that they didn't aim to do that, but in the practice that is what has been happening. So just to give you a brief overview of what is happening, the GEP, which is the transitional the transitional justice system that we established to the peace agreement, has made some reports recently where they say that 900 grassroots leaders, including some of the grassroots combatants that signed the agreements, has been killed. 900 since 2016 up until 2021. 900 grassroots leaders. Just during this year, 27,000 people has been forced to displace, and this is all related to the failure of the government to implement the agreement. For example, there was this program of substitution of crops, where farmers agreed to substitute coca and other drug related crops with legal crops. But what happened is that the help never came. So they agreed to do it. They cleaned their land from coca and other illegal crops, and never received the expected support from the government in terms of technical support, how to crop other things, and in terms of resources, the things that you need to grow legal crops. So this is what is going on. Also, the ambience is very tense. In many senses, this is a hardline right-wing government, and it's been trying to deny what the advances that we made toward the peace. One of the things that is really, really put people on the edge is the report that in the Uribe Vélez government that was from 2002 to 2010, 6,402 people were killed and made pass by guerrilla combatants. So that's what we call the false positive phenomena, which is basically that they were killed and to just inflate the numbers of the results of the army in its war against FARC and other guerrillas. So yeah, people is really angry with all of this happening. Also, because honestly, Colombia in the past 20, 30 years has stopped to being a poor country. The economy was in blossom in many senses, but this blossom of the economy was dependent on extractivism and mainly mining and affecting communities and affecting the environment heavily. So many communities were displaced by the mining projects. One of the most, or the largest, is this Cerrejón. So all of this thing that the economy was depending on mining and the fact that mining affect grassroots communities started to like feed up the people. The people started to like, oh, what is going on? Also, this all has been accompanied by massive corruption scandals. As you may hear in Latin America, we have this international corruption scandal that is called the Obradesh, that the Obradesh Corporation, a Brazilian corporation, just bribe authorities and politicians to get the contracts on many of the countries around the region. But in Colombia also, there's a lot, many small corruption scandals that affect the life of the people in levels that are really, I mean, that's something that is hard to comprehend from a moral point of view. For example, the national policy to nutrition that consists of in public schools they give children's, they give them some lunch and they give them some foods. But what happened there is that in many places around the country, they rob this money. They rob this money for feeding the children, and they give them unsuitable food, like rotten food even. So This started to like, people started to get angry. And nothing happened, you know, nothing happened, in the terms of, we know all of this, this is happening, but, it seems that, legal institutions, in charge of prosecuting these crimes, I don't know, nothing happened. So people are starting to get this sense that what is going on? Nothing is happening. You know, people are starting to get fed up. So this is kind of the ambience behind what the protest. So when the tax reform came, we already were like on the edge.
I wanted to kind of go, I guess, a bit more kind of detail. You're going into, guess, the kind of tax reform, and I think you've given kind of like a very good overview, I think, of all the different, like a very kind of good overview of kind of all the different sort of factors and the kind of elements. And I guess one of the things I've been kind of reading in the media has been that a lot of the kind of protests have been in response to this proposed tax reform. And I guess, can you tell us, I guess, in more detail about the tax reform? And I guess I want to kind of hear what was sort of the rationale given by the ruling government, because this tax reform has been, I guess, part of their response or justified response to the COVID-19 pandemic as it has impacted on Colombia.
What happened here what the government is saying is this is not a tax reform, they say. They say that this is kind of the law for sustainable social programs. And what happened is that in 2019, they give this, in 2019, they did this tax reform that give big corporations and big companies a lot of tax benefits. So in terms, the government lose about 12,000 billion pesos in revenue from taxes. So now what happened is that they decided need to recover that money, especially because after the pandemic, as many countries, the economy was heavily hit by the pandemic. And they decided that they need to collect 25 billion pesos. One of the ways that they were attempting to do it is increasing tax on basic basic necessities like public services. Water, electricity was going to be taxed, at least for the middle classes. And also they wanted to put some tax on food that, of course, angry people, how you're going to put a tax on food in a country that, as now, we have more than 21 million people living in poverty. So how are you going to tax to put a tax on food? Also tax on fuel, which of course increase the price of everything in the country, everything. So people just say, oh, this cannot happen. Like all of this is happening, but this is like the tippy top. We cannot stand that anymore. So this is what is going to happen. We are not going to deny this tax reform that is going to tax our food, that is going to tax our fuel, and that is that put the burden of recovering the money lost during the pandemic on the everyday people instead of the companies, which is funny now, because even the representatives from the company, from the enterprises sector in the country, they say this tax reform is not good because it is going to impact how people are going to consume. So we propose that you increase the taxes on companies. This is something very funny, because they say we propose you increase the taxes on companies, and we take the burden at least for now, because people cannot take the burden. I mean, in this country, about 21 million again people pass from having three meals a day to having just two, and many of them, about 5 million, if I'm right, only one meal a day. So that's why people are really, really angry about. Like, but as I say, this is connect to a, like, ambience of general like discontent with the government.
Yeah. So that's I think, a very good sort of overview of that. I think of the tax reform, and I think, you know, the impacts of it definitely would have been felt disproportionately by working people in Colombia. And I guess, what can you tell us, I guess, about this protest movement that has massive protest movement that has developed in response? There was reports recently in the past several weeks of a general strike. And I guess, additionally, beyond opposing the tax reforms, what can you tell us, I guess, about some of the different sort of demands and some of the kind of different issues that the movement is advocating for in and the kind of different sort of struggles that are becoming different sort of social forces that are also getting involved in this protest movement?
This is honestly a very complex question to answer in the context that is happening right now. The reason I say this is because the protest, around 70%, according to the Texco, around 70% of the population are supporting the protest. Not necessarily being involved in the protest, but at least supporting the protest in one way or another. So there is this confluence of different political forces, of different communities and different kind of groups that are joining together without this is a very loose organization. There is no like a visible leader that you can say, this is the leader of the protest, whatever. Now it's many people, and the, it's the grassroots. At the grassroots level, people are organizing to mobilize without like visible leaders. What I mean is that they say, okay, this is going to happen. The unions call, the national unions call this protest against the tax reform. And immediately many grassroots organizations and even emerging grassroots, like ad hoc organizations that people just say, okay, this is going to happen. We're going to go to the streets and we're going to take the streets and we're going to say to the government that we disagree mainly with the way that the country is going, the way that the country is managed and the nation idea that you are proposing. So this is, in many senses, what is happening is. Yep.
Oh, sorry, sorry about that. Oh, sorry about that. I think there's a problem. There's been an issue. Just keep continuing. Sorry.
Yeah. So, one of the slogans that has emerged in these protests is when a government is more dangerous than a pandemic, you need to mobilize. So we were like on starting the third wave of the pandemic here in Colombia, and people say, you know, it doesn't matter. People are taking the risk. Like I'm willingly to take the risk to get COVID, but we need to go to the streets, and I honestly don't know, because it's really like a general expression of discontent with all the political ambience. That is what is happening. And that is why it's so hard for the government to also open kind of negotiations or like trying to understand what is going on, because it's this general ambience of discontent. So people are saying, you know, we disagree with you. It's basically we disagree with you, and we are making you know that we disagree with you. So this is like my feeling and my opinion in many senses is that this is not solely about the tax reform, but it's about an idea of a nation. So whereas there is this proposal of a nation that is unitary, that is universal, and that everyone behaves and talks and thinks in a single manner. What people is saying on the streets is, you know what? This is a plural country with a pluriverse of ways of thinking who we are. And you are not giving voices to this wide variety of worldviews. And this is what we are on the streets, to reclaim a different idea of nation. This is my sense of what is going on. And this is why it's so hard to say, like, this is the leaders, this is the demands, and this is the groups. And I reckon that there's, from the state institutions, not necessarily from the government, but from the state institutions, is this failure to recognize that this is not solely about the tax reform, but this is about the idea of nation that we want for ourselves. That's my feeling.
Andres, can I just ask about the political context with Venezuela right next door? On the one hand, the Venezuelan economy is in a terrible condition. Arguably, this is because the US is waging economic warfare, but certainly over the last 20 years, there's been a lot of combatancy by the Venezuelan people, a big push to try and build socialism and to try and fight corporate power there. It's been a very difficult struggle. And then in other parts of Latin America, we've had the pink tide. Can you comment on how that sort of, how do the Colombian people look next door to Venezuela and elsewhere across Latin America, and how does that influence people's, I guess, determinedness to fight in Colombia? Do people not necessarily connect with that? Because I've heard this is potentially, I don't know.
I I believe that the uprising is not connected to what is going on in Venezuela. Not at all. I mean, this is more connected to like a global sense of discontent with a neoliberalism project and the way it has built a state and nationhood, more than with the Venezuela crisis. The Venezuela crisis, of course, has impacted hard this country because we have received more than 1 million refugees, which they are in the most dire and really horror. The horror of the situation cannot be overstated. How Venezuela relates to this is mainly because it is the scapegoat of many of the societal and economic and political problems we have. So mainly what is going on is that the right-wing forces always say, oh, you know what, the people on the street want us to become Venezuela, and Venezuela, you know, let the scapegoat. If you think like that, is because you want to be like Venezuela and Venezuela and Venezuela and Venezuela. And even they say that this is orchestrated somehow, organized by Maduro and Venezuela government. And I honestly think that that's far, far, far away from reality. This is a social explosion of what is going on here in Colombia. Nothing is related to Venezuela. Nothing is related to Venezuela. Although the people that want to attach this to Venezuela is mainly right-wing ideology is the one that are attaching this to Venezuela.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I think a kind of interesting kind of response. Would you kind of argue that this movement has a bit more, like this kind of movement that is kind of rising up in Colombia has, I guess, a bit more in common with, I guess, more the political, more the current, I guess, the current situation in Chile, for example, which is at the cusp of a massive kind of protest movement that's not necessarily linked to some of the kind of pink tide sort of governments, especially because in the context of Chile, a lot of the protest movements, the protest movement has no trust in any of the traditional kind of political parties.
Yeah, that's more like it. Like there has been this because the protests started in 2019, as I mentioned, but they were like shut down by the COVID pandemic. But they are re-emerging now. So what happened in 2019 is that this kind of like solidarity, international solidarity with people in Chile. And people in Chile were fighting against a constitution that was created and declared under Pinochet regime. So what they were saying is like, you know what? We want democracy, and we want democracy now. We don't want this Pinochet made constitution. So it's again about the idea of a nation. That what happened in Chile is more connected to what happened in Colombia. Also, and really important here, is the connection to Black Lives Matter movement in the West. Because Black Lives Matter denounced this heavy repression from police forces. And as soon as this started to happen, for example, in the U.S., people here in Colombia say, oh, but is that police also is enacts brutality here in Colombia? So we have to mobilize against this police brutality. So I get this sense that, generally speaking, what is going on is that the West as a civilization is actually on the verge of collapse. And this is what is fueling all of this kind of protest, especially in the global South, when after so many years of colonization, we say, you know what, this is not what we want to be. We want a different idea of nationhood. And the thing is that there's no clarity on what the people want or what we want. There's no clarity. But what is clear is that we don't want what is now. That we don't want this. And we don't know where we are going. We don't know really what we want. But we know that we don't want this. That's the general sense of what I feel that is happening.
And I guess going into the, I guess the next kind of question, and this is going a bit kind of backwards, I guess, but I kind of want to hear, I guess, a bit more in detail, what is the extent of the level of kind of repression of the protests that is currently being kind of carried out by the ruling government, especially since it would be definitely interesting to note, especially in the context of what you kind of refer to in terms of this comparison to the Black Lives Matter movement?
Okay. Yeah, there's the report, the late report from Temblores NGO, which is an NGO that has been like collecting since a few years, has been collecting the police brutality acts. They collect and they issue these statistics. And the last report that was issued that yesterday, I don't know the report for today. They released the report sometime around 5 p.m. or 6 p.m., but now it's like 4:46 p.m., so we don't have the report for today. But as yesterday, the report, 1,708 cases of police violence. These cases are 202 victims of physical violence, 37 homicides, 831 arbitrary or irregular detentions, like people that are detained without the proper procedure, how do you arrest someone, 22 eye aggressions. And this eye aggressions is again something very related to Chile, because this was kind of like a practice that's emerged in Chile protests, where the police shoot these gum bullets to protesters, and they started to shoot directly to the eyes. I don't know how on earth you get to that. So we have 22 of these, and we have 110 cases where the police has openly shoot with guns to the civil population that are on the protest, on the manifestations, and on the rallies. Also, there's 10 victims of sexual violence report by Temblores NGO. So also Defensoría del Pueblo, like the People Defensors, which is an state institution in charge of defending human rights in the country, has report 89 disappearances. These are people that just disappeared during the protests. All of these reports is since the 28th of April. So 88 people has disappeared in the protest. And I mean, well, at least from my personal standpoint, this disappearance is one of the worst kind of crimes that you can commit against someone, because it is very common. It has been a common practice in Latin America, common practice of repression, that when somebody is dissenting with authoritarian government states, they make them disappear. And this affects heavily communities, families, and so on. Because one thing is knowing that your kid, your parent, or your spouse, your friend has been killed. Another thing is it just disappears and you don't know nothing about him or her or what happened to them. So this is the 89 of those, and this is it. Personally, this really pained me. I found this horrific, like in not in the good sense of the word, but like horror. This is horror when somebody is disappears. So 89 cases of that. On top of that, the response of the government was to issue the militarization of the cities. They call this like the something like the military assistance for the police, something like that. But basically, you are seeing the military parades on the street with all the guns and with all the I don't know much about guns, and I hope never have to know something about guns. But you see these kind of tanks on the streets, these trucks of the army on the streets. So the country is the military are on the streets. And yeah, this is really scary. You walk on the street, the Saturday was coming back from one of these protests, and when I saw the military, I really got scared, really, really feel the scare. And there's still no, like, records of the army acting, but it's a scare tactic in many senses. Of course, there's also violence in the hands of the protesters. A police station was bombed with some policemen inside. 11 policemen were inside when they bombed the station. This is one of the highlights. But I mean, the thing is that you have this social situation erupting, and you only put fuel to this when you act in this kind of violent way. In the places of this is all across the country. So in the places where the police has restrained to act violently, protests go peacefully. So this is what is going on.
I just want because we've got to wrap it up kind of now, unfortunately, yeah. Andres. But you've given a kind of like a very sort of good, lots of kind of detail on, I guess, everything that is happening in Colombia right now. And I guess, do you have, I guess, any kind of final kind of comments to kind of sum up the discussion that we've been having, which I think has been very valuable and insightful in terms of what's happening?
And also, do you know a good website or somewhere where we can follow Colombian politics?
A website to recommend you? I'm going first with your question, like a final comment. As I say, what is happening in Colombia right now is about the idea of nation that we are building. People want a plural nation in many senses, a nation that where many voices can be heard, and they want a new idea of a country. That's what is happening, and this is what people is fighting for. There is no a goal or we want this explicitly, but just this general kind of idea. The protest, I guess that by today is the 8th day, so this is reaching a point of exhaustion in the protest movement as well. People are tired to be in the streets, which is understandable. Food is starting to get as scarce in the main cities because the roads are blocked, and so it's reaching a point of exhaustion, which doesn't mean that it's going to stop. I think that what is going to happen is that it's going to be in pause. People is going to withdraw, take some rest, and then this year, I guess that this year is going to be like this, and again protest, and they go to rest, and then again protest, all the way to 2022 when we have elections. So I don't know if through elections this is going to change. I don't know, but this is my kind of feeling, is that we are on the road to elections. This is going to be like this, like waves of protest after wave of protest after wave of protest. And people are really, people lost the fear that they used to have in a country that has been characterized by state violence. So people kind of lost the fear. And even with all the police brutality, people are going to continue to move. Yeah, that's how I see what is going to happen with the rest of the year. In regards to a website that you can follow, perhaps you, Temblores NGO is trying to is in Spanish, but Temblores NGO is following closely what is going on in regards of police brutality. Pacifista is an independent news portal. They are also following this closely, but all of these are in Spanish. And also, I don't know, Twitter. Twitter has become the way to get knowledge about what is going on in the protest, because Twitter and Instagram, because young people are going to the protest and just record everything live. What is going on here? Live. The videos are... some of the videos are really wonderful, because most of the protest is this massive massive demonstrations of people drumming and dancing and singing on the street, like, you know, very like a party on the street. And this is wonderful and this is fantastic when you start to see that evening comes and night comes, you start to see the videos start to report police brutality. So how this is kind of the trend, and Twitter is kind of like the place to go in many senses.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Andres. Yeah, we really appreciate you giving a very a really great sort of interview and having a discussion with us on what's happening in Colombia, especially since we're actually getting a perspective from someone who is actually there living in the country. We don't always get that kind of opportunity to have those kind of discussions on our program. So yeah, thank you very much, Andres.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for inviting me and to listen to what is going on in the country. Up until recently, international press wasn't reporting, but now we are starting to see that the international press is focusing on what is going on here. Thank you.